Jim Davis is the drug epidemiologist at the New Mexico Department of Health. He works mainly in the areas of PDMP, sometimes referred to as PMP data analysis, as well as in drug overdose morbidity and mortality. He is a member of several CSTE subcommittees, so you may have met him already, including he co-chairs the PMP subcommittee for CSTE and is part of the planning subgroup of the overdose subcommittee. So please welcome Jim Davis.
Well, good morning. Thanks for hanging in to the end of the meeting. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about prescription drug history, prescription history, and overdose death. So the overdose epidemic in New Mexico, you may have seen some things kind of like this morning from my division director. The yellow line is heroin overdoses. It's important to remember that heroin is often undercounted in mortality data. But we had heroin in the 90s, and everybody was looking at heroin when the prescription drug stuff exploded in the 2000s, which is the red line, and these are overdose deaths. And now we're starting to see methamphetamine pick up. Partially, it moved in with the oil boom. We had a little oil boom for a few years in our southeastern counties. And methamphetamine is somewhat associated with the oil patch. And it moved in and then it spread from there. Our total overdose death rate from 2007 through 2014 has been pretty stable, at least if you do like a three-year moving average, and it averages about 24 per 100,000 over that period. And one of the questions is, how much of the prescription opioid, prescription drug-involved death is due to diversion? Because it's kind of the narrative. You know, if you think about what people are pointing at, and what we heard about this morning, the folks injecting Opana. And that's kind of the narrative of the overdose epidemic. So how much is that as a total? So these are overdose death data from our medical investigator with text cause of death fields. We have a central medical investigator. We're one of 20 states. Back in many years ago when I did traffic crash data, we were one of three. So we've had a centralized medical investigator for a very long time. They do all unattended death in the state. And their job is to determine cause and manner of death and circumstances. And they do a great job of this, and they have the usual challenges of all such folks. And then data from the prescription monitoring program. We left the D out of it in New Mexico. And we're pulling generic drug names from the Board of Pharmacy. And our medical investigator on the time frame involved, 2014 to 2012, has a very high rate of having specific drug names in the cause of death. So instead of saying multiple drug overdose, thanks a lot. They say multiple drug with parentheses, heroin, alprazolam, and carisoprodol, close parent, toxicity. So we know which drugs are there, and we have some code which pulls these out and standardizes the names. They generally spell them correctly, but we fix the ones that they don't. And they use the generic names. We pull the generic names from the PMP data, so we call it alprazolam, not Xanax. And then this is linked by name, date of birth, with LinkKing software, SaaS-based, freeware, which actually does really a pretty good job. And then summarize the PMP data into with a two-year look back. So from the date of injury, and we use the date of death if they didn't specify the date of injury, we look back 2 years in PMP data and see what the prescription history looks like. And then a second thing, then we match the individual drugs from the medical investigator side and the PMP side. So if they had oxycodone and alprazolam in toxicology mentioned on the death certificate, not just in tox, but it's mentioned on the death certificate, which is the pathologist's interpretation that drug was important as part of the cause of death. If they have that mentioned in the death record, then we look to see if they have recent prescription for it. So this is deaths with specific drugs coded, which is 93% of the overdose deaths reported in the period. There's 1,325 of them. There's 716 with identified controlled substances. So they had a controlled substance in the text fields and we recognized it. And the analysis is going to focus on these 716 cases. And recent prescriptions are defined as those that ended no more than 30 days before the date of injury. This is a stretch. If you go to current prescriptions, ones that ended no earlier than the date of injury, the percentages go down some. But actually the change isn't all that much. And then classified diversion here, just to keep it simple. No diversion means that there were recent prescriptions for all the drugs involved. So there was a prescription that ended no more than 30 days before the date of injury for every drug that we could identify. And, of course, this is only the controlled substances, right, the ones that you see in the PMP. So things like some kinds of antidepressants, which are fairly common in overdose deaths, are not included here. Partial diversion, they had a prescription for at least some of them. Overdose deaths are complicated. They commonly involve more than one drug, especially on the prescription side. And so this is partial diversion. Folks who had at least one recent prescription, I sort of think of as medical users, the people who are regularly seeing healthcare folks and renewing their prescriptions. And then full diversion, there are just no recent prescriptions for the identified controlled substances. Some of these folks still, as we'll see, are medical users. They're just not dying of the things that are prescribed to them. So, controlled substance involvement. The total overdose deaths, no identified controlled substances are a little under half, the other half. Then if we look at it, full diversion is about half, and people with no diversion are about a little more than a third. If we restrict this to current prescriptions, that goes down to about 30% instead of 36%. And then some diversion is a smaller slice. And so we're focusing on this group. So here is the diversion status by age and sex for those deaths, 700 deaths. The red line is a little hard to see probably with the light. I hope you can see it in the back. That's the full diversion line. It's much higher in men, and it skews quite a lot younger. These are the folks who, to some extent, are the narrative, right? Younger men injecting diverted drugs. The no diversion, and this is counts of deaths, so in the no diversion group among men, it peaks later in terms of age, and it skews older. That group skews 35 to 64. Whereas the full diversion group starts picks up much younger, picks up in a younger age group. The NOSDA survey shows that the people who are diverting drugs tend to be in that younger age group, that 18 to 25 in the NOSDA survey. And this matches it. Among the women, you'll note that the no diversion group is bigger than the full diversion group. And the peak isn't that different. It's older in that group. And the partial diversion folks look more like, especially in the men, they look more like the no diversion folks than the full diversion types. And if you look at it by race, ethnicity, for the three race ethnic groups that we have that are big enough to do anything with, the full diversion is much more common in the Native American population and much less so in the whites, and it sort of shades from one end to the other, but it's more common in the minority population, which make up the majority of our population. I suspect that somewhat has to do with healthcare access. And I guess I should note that the overdose death rate for Native Americans in New Mexico, unlike the rest of the country, is lower than that for either white or Hispanic populations. Although the diversion, that disparity is decreasing, and it's decreasing for the wrong reason, that the Native American rate is coming up. So, a few usage categories, again, to classify things. One of the troubles with anything like this is that the data are complex and it's got to be knocked down some way so I can get my mind around it. So, for opioids and benzos, we're looking at a use category based on a six-month look back, looking back 6 months from the date of death or date of injury, based on levels of usage of none, one prescription, short-term, more than one prescription, but less than 90 days. And then what I've called episodic, folks who've got 90 days or more of coverage in 6 months, but they're not full-time users. And then full-time, they've got 90% of the days in 6 months coverage. And this allows for edge effects where I don't count prescriptions because they didn't start in the time frame. And we only show the top three of these in the graphs. There's very little evidence that single short-term prescriptions have much impact on overdose death. There's quite a lot of evidence that shows that long-term use and high-dose use do. So if we look at the opioid use history in controlled substance deaths, so among the no diversion folks, 90% of them have more than one prescription in the 6 months preceding their injury, preceding the overdose. And in fact, a pretty large percentage of them are full-time opioid users. In the PMP as a whole, less than 5% of everybody is full-time opioid users. In the partial diversion, it's still quite high, but it's a little lower. And there's a lot more short-term use in that group. And in the full diversion, it's much lower, but note that there are two people in the full diversion group that are full-time opioid users in the PMP. They just didn't die from the drug they were prescribed. And there's 10 folks in that group, which is 10% of that group, who I would think of as medical users of opioids. They just didn't happen to die of the one they're prescribed. So as a percentage, with at least 90 days of coverage in the last 2 years, and I guess the thing to note about opioids is that physical dependence develops in less than 30 days of full-time use. So people with 90 days of coverage are quite likely dependent. This is kind of what you'd expect. The folks who are diverting drugs are less likely to have them through legitimate channels. But that's still pretty high. I mean, it's a quarter of them have had use. So again, this is that sort of transition. People transition from medical use to non-medical use to illicit drugs. Or at least they do in many places. Because we've had such a long-standing heroin problem, it's harder for us to tease that out. Because we have a lot of heroin, straight-up heroin initiation. So the percentage of deaths with high dosage, again, it's 35%. The percent in the overall PMP of opioid users with high dosage is, again, less than 10%. Am I running out of time? Okay. Did I skip something? Okay, so here's the same thing for benzos. Again, high percentages in the non-diversion have full-time benzos, especially in the non-diversion. But there's a pretty high percentage among the full-diversion folks who have recent benzodiazepine prescriptions, but they didn't die of the drug they were prescribed. They may not have died of the drug in that class, but it's a risk factor for overdose death. And again, you know, long-term benzos aren't all that common in there. And then opioid plus benzos, the dual use, again, you know, on the non-diversion folks, two-thirds of them had prescriptions for both, recent prescriptions for both. Long-term overlaps of these are a really strong risk factor for overdose death. So this is a prescribing issue. And so we have a complex problem. There are a bunch of different subsets in here. It is not just the people using diverted drugs. You know, the Opana example from this morning is important. That's probably half of it, of the full-on diversion. So the medical users are at risk, and they account for perhaps half of overdose deaths. And we have some prescribing practices, long-term use of these drugs, high doses, and in particular, mixing opioids and benzos. Less than 3% of the folks in the PMP have that combination. A very large fraction of medical user overdose death has that combination. So diversion's common. Almost two-thirds involve at least some level of diversion. And it's not restricted to the non-medical users. Right, the medical users are diverting drugs as they sort of go off the reservation, if you will. And the full diversion is most common in men, and it skews younger, although the peak in men for full diversion goes really pretty old, you know, 50. And the age pattern is more like the non-diversion among the women. So I think we need, you know, it's largely a matter of segmenting the problem. We have our existing medical users. We have people we haven't started on drugs yet. We have the full diversion folks who may have started, who may be illicit drug users who are moving back and forth into other drugs. And it varies by age and race ethnicity. So it's a question of segmenting the problem in a reasonable way. And then I've been kind of hammering this because I don't think it's in the story about the way we think about prescription drug overdose. The medical users are at significant risk for overdose death. They're about half, some of them doing diversion, some of them not. Opioids and benzos are prominent. The combination is way overrepresented. I know I said that before, but want to emphasize that point. And it's a fairly even split by gender, and it's concentrated in working age individuals, 25 to 64. So, a few recommendations. Prescribers need to be aware of this. We need to push this with them. I think the prescribers see the narrative as it being the diversion narrative among other people. Well, okay, but all those drugs got prescribed to somebody, and the medical users are at risk. So we're overusing these things. We need to dial that back. We need to get them to use the PMP and to pay attention to monitoring the patients. And then we're hoping improved prescribing practices will reduce the risk to the current medical users and also reduce the available supply through social sources, grandma's medicine cabinet and other places like that. So thanks, and ignore the questions part.